from transforming blighted buildings to a specific housing project right here in Southport. We are checking in with Renee Dobis of Connecticut Housing Partners, as we do once a month right here on Melissa in the Morning, to talk about the latest housing news in Connecticut. Hey, Renee, welcome back.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Of course. I was actually thinking about you, Renee, a few weeks back when the governor announced that there was an initiative, and I believe this is part of the new housing law that went into effect, to have blighted buildings or abandoned buildings basically transformed into housing. And all I thought of was, well, I'm hoping to God it's Connecticut Housing Partners doing it. And the reason I say that is because this has been your model for over 30 years, for people who don't know. You know, you've been a nonprofit that literally does exactly that. So I wanted to get your take on this, and I didn't know if you're part of this, part of the law. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes, it does make sense. So there's been 12 blighted properties across Connecticut that have been identified. And it's basically funding that's going through DECD. It's about $15 million. And it's actually going to different cities so that the cities can clean up the properties first, because they're brownfield or light brownfield, and they need to be cleaned up before any construction can happen to convert the assets. So it's Waterbury, Thomaston, Shelton, Plainville, Norwalk, New Britain, Hamden, Enfield, East Hartford, Ansonia, and Seymour. So some of the money is not actually going to clean stuff up. It's actually going to help create a study to see what needs to be done for those particular parcels.
Okay.
So that means it hasn't been evaluated yet, but it's still a good step forward because we do need to clean up these parcels. There's brownfields across Connecticut, and it's basically assets that are just sitting there that can't be used because it needs to be abated, whether it be from oil leaks or lead or asbestos or, you know, any other environmental issue that happened on that particular property.
So, I mean, which I know that they've been doing investments into brownfield remediations and everything, which is, you know, it's a big deal. I love that the state does that. But, you know, it's the next part that I feel like we always have to be careful about, which is who is then developing those properties. And of course, I've gotten to know you very closely, Renee, and I love the model of Connecticut Housing Partners. So little background for people just listening. Renee and I got connected, I don't even know how many years ago, but when we did, the thing I loved about Connecticut Housing Partners is, again, it's a nonprofit, but you guys have local developers. You guys are here across the state, and you work a lot of the times. I mean, give people a sense, Renee, you work directly with municipalities on these projects, don't you?
Yes, I do. I work very closely with municipalities because I talk to them about, you know, I talk to first selectmen and mayors because I want to understand what their priorities are in their communities and how I can partner with them. And many of the leaders in these municipalities that I speak to, they truly do understand the need for housing that's affordable. And last week, I was on a panel in Stanford with BizNow, and the topic was housing. And there was over 200 people in this room, and it was really interesting. A lot of them were members of various municipalities. And so I really tried to say to them, you know, we're talking about affordable housing, and everyone's just sitting there. So finally, I had to say, I need you to understand who we're housing. Who is moving into this housing? I said, it's your hairdresser that you allow them to work in your community, but they can't live there.
Mm-hmm.
It's your nail technician. It's the pharmacist tech behind the counter when you go collect your medication. It's your fireman. It's your police.
It's your kid's
CNA
teacher.
It's your doctor's
right.
office. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, we really try to talk to them about that. And New Canaan is, you know, kind of known for being anti-affordable housing. And so I actually had a representative from New Canaan come up to me and talk to me, and I gave her card because she said, you know, we want to build affordable housing in New Canaan. So the tide is shifting, and that, I think, is fantastic.
Well,
and the other thing,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say really quick to just kind of piggyback on that. I remember when you and I had, I think, just an entire conversation. One of our earlier conversations was about how annoying it is that we've coined this phrase affordable housing, because just the perception of it is is, you know, a lot of times it's a huge misconception, because that's exactly what it is. It's the people that you want living, you know, where they work, and you want to support these people, because again, it's, I don't know. I just think there's a huge misconception around, and I can't stand that phrase at all. So I just think that's interesting. So the education's getting out there, and I love to hear that. Sorry, but continue.
No. So the other member on this panel that I was on was the commissioner of the Department of Housing, and she announced that with the latest bill that passed, 8002, that the Department of Housing has now been granted housing authority rights, which means that she's going to take and look at state-owned land, and she's going to build affordable housing directly onto the state-owned land without going through another nonprofit. She's going to do it herself, so she'll get her own design team together and things like that. And then she said, once it's built, we're not going to manage it. We're going to lease it to the local housing authority or the local nonprofit to manage it and lease it up and keep it going. So I thought that that was a very interesting concept, because she admitted it's taking too long to go through the state to develop affordable housing. And she said that over the next two or three years, they have about 6,400 units in the pipeline. That sounds like a lot, but it really isn't when we have a shortage of 150,000. So they're really trying to pivot and build housing as fast as possible. And I love the idea that they're using state land that's just sitting there, not being utilized, and then local nonprofits and housing authorities will take over the management of it through the leasing process. So I was very encouraged by that, and that was the first time I heard that.
We're doing our monthly check-in with Renee Dobis of Connecticut Housing Partners, our housing expert here on the show. And let's switch gears, Renee, because I actually had one of our listeners come up with this next topic, bringing attention to what you guys call River Bend. This is 140 Bronson Road in Southport, and Connecticut Housing Partners has its hands all over this project. What's going on?
So this is really exciting for us. This building is a brand new building that was actually built by a market rate developer. And so I connected with him, and I'm buying the building from him. And we should have ownership of it, official ownership of it, sometime this month. We're actively in the closing process now. And this has 91 units of housing. And so when I started working with him to purchase this building, it'll be turnkey for us, which is fantastic. And I hate to say it, it's cheaper to buy than it is to build because of all the design standards that we have to utilize when we're working with the Department of Housing. But the commissioner is very supportive of this project. And so what I'm doing is I'm working with Homes with Hope, and I'm setting aside 15 units for them for seniors who are homeless. Homes with Hope has a shelter, and they have some housing, but they don't have enough to house everybody that needs housing. And then I'm also working with the VA, because veterans also are having struggles to find affordable housing. So I'm working with them and identifying some of their people that they support to have some of those folks move into the building as well. As well, I'm working with the VA for our new project that we're building in Terryville, Connecticut as well. So it's really exciting, and there's been a lot of interest in the building. When people found out that we were the ones who were going to ultimately own it, we're starting to build our wait list now, and people are applying. And I actually had a woman, she called me, and she was a senior, and she said to me, she goes, Renee, she goes, I really want to get into the Southport building. She said, I'm living in my car. She said, I was living someplace, you know, I had a roommate, and she had a Section 8 voucher, and she kicked me out, so now I'm living in my car. So she came in yesterday, you know, she filled out the application so we can get her on the wait list. So I'm really, you know, I'm confident I'll be able to get her house, but, you know, it'll probably take a few weeks before we're able to do that. So this is what I see on the ground every day. You know, people are calling me, people are coming in, and, you know, a senior, she's a senior. She says she gets about $1,800 a month in Social Security, and then she works part-time at, I think it's Aldi's that she says she works at part-time to be able to live, because, you know, think about it, $1,800 a month. It's like you work your whole life, and then you retire, and you get your Social Security, and guess what? You're in poverty. if you have no other source of income, if you don't have a 401k or a pension or a part-time job, it's just astounding. So I'm seeing more and more seniors that are really struggling to have housing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well, I mean, so $1,800 a month. I don't even know if you can get a studio in Fairfield County for that.
Right.
Like, I can't believe somebody will be able to live in Southport. Because would you call this now 100% affordable? Like, is this entire building considered affordable?
Yes, it is. So
that's amazing.
Yes. So it was built under 830G, so 30% of the units were affordable. And I do know that the developer who built it, he had to sue the town of Fairfield because Southport is part of Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like a 3-year battle before he was able to get permission to be able to build the property. So now that I'm buying it, I'm converting it, it'll be 100% affordable, which is terrific. And it really helps Fairfield because Fairfield only has 3% of its units as affordable right now. So this should help them. And I've been in communication with the town, so they're aware that we're purchasing it, and they're A-okay with it. You know, we have a presence. We had a presence there. They know us. They've talked to us about other opportunities, but the opportunities they're bringing forward to us are a little too small. So he brought an opportunity to me earlier this week, and so I connected him with Homes with Hope. I said, it's kind of out of our wheelhouse. We don't do real small things, but Homes with Hope does. And so I connected them. So now they're starting to talk. So hopefully this opportunity will work out for them. And then there'll be more affordable housing going into Fairfield.
So this sounds really crazy, Renee. And I'm sure I am trying to simplify an incredibly complex. Well, I know that's what I'm trying to do. But why can't we mimic that model then more? And what I mean by that is, so this was formerly an 830G project, which would mean 30% was affordable. You buy it, it's now 100% an affordable property, which again, I don't need to get into all the numbers of it. If people want information, they could go to the Connecticut Housing Partners website. I'll put a link and everything. But to me, why can't we do more of that model then? Why can't we actually have legitimate housing development projects that are 100% affordable? Actually, people who can afford to live in the towns or cities that they are working in or want to retire in. Why can't we do more of that model then?
Well, I think we are. We're trying. It's something that's been happening in the past few years because the commissioner, you know, Department of Housing is really trying to be as creative as possible to get as much affordable housing as possible. And so this is the second deal that I'm doing with the Department of Housing where I'm buying a building and then converting it to 100%. So the Holiday Inn that I bought in Bridgeport, that was a market rate development. And so with the financing that I'm able to get through the Department of Housing, it allows me to be able to convert it to affordable. If I did traditional financing through a bank, I wouldn't be able to do it because the mortgages would be too high. And so what I'm doing with the Department of Housing is I'm getting deferred loan, which basically means any profit that the property exhibits at year end after the audit is completed, then 75% of it goes to the state to pay the mortgage, and then 25% stays with the property. And so a traditional bank, I can't do that, right? So that's why state funding and financing is so important to be able to allow us to do this. So this is the second one that I was able to do with the Department of Housing. And, of course, I'm going to keep looking for others as well. And so I'm talking to some other developers as well to see what kind of interest or appetite they have because we're paying market rate for the building. It's not like we're buying it at a discount.
Right.
So the developer doesn't lose. But it's the financing that allows me to be able to make it affordable. And then that way we can compress the rents to be where they're supposed to be. So it's 80% area medium income and below.
To me, Renee, I just think that is to me like a better standard. And I think people would be more on board with. Yeah, like, I don't know. I just feel like this, like, I'm glad that the state is at least kind of more getting on board with working with you, which we've been talking about for years. But I think that is kind of the model that would make people, first of all, understand affordable housing a little bit better. A term that I can't stand, but I, you know, just for the purposes of this conversation and keeping it to the point. But the other thing is that I think that you're talking about it all being local. There's such a, you know, I don't understand the state's, you know, idea of, hey, let's bring in a developer, make money. And a lot of times these developers aren't even from this state. It's just to me, I mean, I'm glad to see that you now have two properties under your belt that we're doing this and we're seeing success with that. I just think sometimes we make entities like yours, you know, have to get through so much red tape and we end up making more division over affordable housing than we really need to. So I get this to me is a great story and I'm glad to hear it. I do hope that we see more examples of this type of development going on, because I think if you've got an entire building that is now affordable, but you look at the pictures of this building that you guys took over in Southport. I mean, it's gorgeous.
Yes.
That's answering the problem. is answering the problem. That's answering the call that I think everybody wants in some regard, but it's how we get there that we can't agree upon. I don't know. Can you tell I'm frustrated? But I'm also happy. Like, I'm happy to hear it. I just think sometimes it's like, why did we take 20 steps when we could have taken two? You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm just saying. Yeah. But, you know, Renee, you're laughing at me. And that's okay. I'd laugh at me, too, sometimes.
No, I'm not laughing. I live it every day. I understand. You know, believe me, there's days we pull our hair out because, you know, the bureaucracy can be ridiculous at times. But, you know, you just have to slog through and get to the goal. That's what it's about.
Yeah. No question. And look, I do think that there have been very valid concerns, especially because one of the things that I pull my hair out about is 830G, which is one of the most broken housing ways we do things in Connecticut. It doesn't make sense to me. It's very clear that we have to fix it. We don't want to fix it, but we just got it. And we're just going to keep building on top of it. But to my earlier point, which I'm glad that we agree on, I think the model you guys are doing, it makes a difference. And so if you can get the state on board with working with entities like Connecticut Housing Partners, I do think that's more of a win for communities. And I think, like you saw with New Canaan, I think you'll see more people want to get on board with those types of projects. So, Renee, I always appreciate having these updated talks with you. Thank you so much for giving us the time. If people want more information about that specific project in Southport, I will link it to our website, voiceofct.com.